This Hoko Mojo podcast is sponsored by the Columbia Festival of the Arts. Your summer starts here, online at columbiafestival.com.
Good afternoon, and welcome to another episode of And Then There's That, a biweekly podcast of people, politics, and punditry in Howard County on the Hoko Mojo Network. I'm Paul Scalney, and I'm here at Lakeside Cafe in Columbia Town Center with my co-host, Dennis Lane. Joining us today as our guest is Howard County Council Chairwoman Courtney Watson, who represents District 1. But as always, let's take a look at some of the news making the headlines this week. What you got, Dennis?
The we talk about before the show starts. Well, you know, not much news this week, but you know, it was a good week.
Well, I came in thinking it was a slow week, and you shot me down.
Well, because the big news we got last night was the bell tower here at the lakefront is going to be dismantled. This is like,
tell me you're kidding.
After what 40 some years, they realize there might be a problem. What gets me though is that they're finally kind of realizing, okay, it's got to come down. But there was no plan. I mean, and now they're saying, well, it'll go back up sometime.
And this is Howard County, so we're all about planning things out. But I mean, they spent like, what, 40 grand in the last 3 years trying to fix this thing?
Yeah, just to shore it up. And earlier in the year, when I saw the scaffolding go up, I thought maybe they're actually repairing it. But no, it's going to come down. And just in time for all, of course, the summer lakefront celebrations. You know, we'll have the pier blocked off. It's just a lovely picture postcard for Columbia. The article flash says, the association plans to replace the bell tower, but is unsure when that will happen, where the new tower will be located, and what it will look like, as that will all depend upon their redevelopment plans for Town Center.
Well, can we take maybe that $250,000 the delegate Bobo got for
Symphony
CA
Woods,
and maybe use that for the bell tower?
Well, and doesn't, if it's going to be part of the Town Center redevelopment plans, doesn't that mean CA has to talk to General Growth? Anyway, that was the first story. I love this one.
Yes, you do.
This is a good Father's Day story. There's a clerk in Howard County, I think it was a Rite Aid in Ellicott City, was assaulted by a gentleman with a pit bull who was upset at the because the store clerk or manager caught his son trying to lift a sports drink. He was trying to shoplift. So the father goes back out of the store, and he comes back in with his pit bull and chases the manager back into his office.
Go ahead, striking him in the chest. I mean,
striking him in the chest.
Well, it's funny because I guess he got 18 months for it, for assaulting the store clerk with a dog. You know, you think of assault with a gun or a knife or whatever. I just got this vision of this guy running down the aisle holding a dog.
But the best part of the story, though, is you can appreciate it. His defense attorney, Samuel Truitt, argued that the dog was not intended to intimidate. The father was only trying to be overcompensating for his lack of involvement in his son's life.
So he screwed up as a dad, and he thought he would help his kid commit a crime by getting his pit bull.
Showed him how to deal with
conflict.
Yes.
Then there's the funeral home.
The funeral home.
You love this one, too.
I do love this one. You know, there's a group that wants to build a funeral home in Clarksville, and they want to put it between two churches, the St. Louis Church and the Christ Lutheran Church. There's this lot, I guess, in between the two churches. And I'm thinking, if you're going to put a funeral home someplace,
it's a great place to put it.
Put it between two churches. Well, people are up
and outcry.
The outcry.
How dare you put a funeral home between two churches?
But one person said, they thought it was bad that the Monsignor of the church would have to look out and see a funeral home.
What's wrong with this picture? You know,
and I'm thinking, well, this is not like a nightclub, okay? I mean, sure, occasionally there's a popular person who dies and there's a lot of traffic associated with the funeral. But most of the people really don't like going to funeral homes. Well,
I guess how many people you have at your funeral is somewhat of a sign of how popular you were. But I mean, let's face it, most people really don't have that many people
who come
to their funeral. I'm sure our guests would have just swarms of people coming.
Absolutely. And you too, I'm sure. So that was an interesting story. I just left them. If you can't build a funeral home between two churches, where in God's name can you put a funeral, God's name, between two churches?
And then, of course, not a week can go by without some story about some referendum or somebody challenging some law that our county council tries to pass.
We do referendums well in Howard County.
We do. Well, we try anyway.
We do stories about referendums well.
So I guess the county council some time ago passed, gave consent to a developer to go ahead and do some development in the Turf Valley area.
Well, this was actually, the developer wanted to build a 55,000 square foot
grocery
store as opposed to an 18,000 square foot. I mean, this is not a big deal.
No.
But it was.
So went to referendum.
Yeah, went to referendum. Mark Norman put together a group, Citizens for Open Government, COG. He wanted to be a cog in the wheel. And
I think Andrew Beltram was involved in that as well.
Andrew Beltram was involved in that. But the real story behind this was the grocery store in question was Harris Teeter, which is a non-union store. The unions, they're doing everything they can to keep Harris Teeter and Wegmans out of Howard County. They mobilized to support Mark Norman and Angie, and they parachuted in these union employees from all over the state. And they think came as far away as Delaware.
I think we're out of state.
To get the required number of signatures. So I always said this referendum had a stench to it, but...
Nevertheless.
They were thrown out because of Maryland law is very explicit, saying that your signature on a petition has to match exactly what your voter's registration is. And, of course, everybody got upset about that. They've taken it to federal court. They've taken it to state court. I think this may be the last episode. Judge McCrone had, like, 7 months to go through this or something like that.
Well, and I think he said that the group failed to demonstrate a violation of the right to vote. And that's really what it came down to.
And really, you know, what we do in this county is we elect our county council people to
represent us
and to learn about these issues and to vote on it. And I think that's a great segue into our guest today.
We're very excited today to have County Council Chairperson Courtney Watson with us today. Welcome.
Thank you.
Representing District 1, which I guess is Ellicott City and Elkridge.
And Hanover.
And Hanover.
So. Not Hanover, PA.
No.
So, you know, we're doing a little, we always try to do a little digging about our guests and try to come up with something. And, you know, there's not much out there on you, Courtney. You're just kind of squeaky
you
wheel.
You haven't talked to my four brothers.
Your three teenage children, right?
Three teenage children.
That's right.
13, 14.
18, 16, and 13.
18, 16, and 13. But you were an Athelton Raider, I understand.
Yes, graduated from Athelton.
We mm-hmm. share that in common.
I didn't know that.
Before Wild Lake opened, I actually spent 2 years in Athelton. So,
but Courtney, you must have graduated at least 10, 15 years after Dennis, the way I'm kind of looking at. Our listeners can't see what I see.
And you share a common trait with our fellow council person, Mary Kay Siggety. You're also a product of Jesuit University?
Yes, Loyola. Uh-huh.
And that's Loyola here in Baltimore?
Yes.
Okay. Both undergraduate and master's?
That's correct.
Okay. We were actually chatting beforehand. Our last story was talking about the referendum, and we thought we would kind of jump into that, talk a little bit about referendums, not so much specifically this case, as much as referendums in large. There, as Dennis suggested earlier, referendums have sort of reared their ugly head as a tool mm-hmm. of disgruntled citizens.
Yes.
And just wanted to chat a little bit about your thoughts about it.
Well, I think that it's important to have the right to referendum. I think it's important that the people can take a law that's passed that they may not agree with to referendum. So I support the right to referendum. I think in Howard County, we have a number of conflicts that we have to work out. Fortunately, the state law is the law that governs how the referendum is done. So it's really an issue that has to be resolved at the state level with the state delegation. From my perspective, I am looking at some local legislation that would help resolve the conflicts between state and county law on referendums. Because a lot of times when the petitioner takes a petition to the Board of Elections, they run into some problems there trying to discern the differences between state and county law. State law always takes precedence, but when the Board of Elections is looking at the petition, it's confusing to them if they have two sets of standards to try to meet. So one of the things I will be looking at is whether we can resolve those conflicts between state and county law.
And I'm actually curious what you're looking at, but maybe before we go there, just for the benefit of our listeners, the law that's provided for right now requires 5,000 signatures.
Yes.
And that law has been on the books for well before we had almost, 300,000 citizens. So there's some question out there as to whether that's the right number.
And wasn't it the law originally written that it was 5,000 or 3%? Wasn't it the greater or the greater of? I mean, wasn't there a percentage as well? No? Okay. My mistake.
That was,
I don't remember.
That was your dream 3 nights ago. So, and then on the other hand, we have this law that's, I think, the one you're suggesting on the books of the state, which requires that the signatures on petitions for referendums actually match exactly the signatures on your voter registration. So it's interesting. On the one hand, the 5,000 is low. On the other hand, you've got this offsetting law, which
they do tend to offset each other. I think that the signature standard is pretty tough. I think that's pretty tough to meet, but it does help offset the 5,000 limit. So I think the state level delegation is going to have to resolve that issue.
Is that how the $5,000 should be offset, though?
You know, no.
If you're Courtney Watson and somebody calls you Courts, or you know, you don't put your middle initial.
Well,
in.
I'm Mary Courtney Watson.
There you go.
So
you're a perfect example.
Right, I am a perfect example. Right, but I don't think that my signature should necessarily be discounted if I signed it Mary C. Watson or I signed it Courtney Watson.
As long as it's you and
exactly
it's discernible.
Right. Yes.
So what kind of laws are you looking at?
Well, from my perspective. We are limited to resolving the conflicts between state and county law. And what we really need to do is just make sure that the county code matches the state code. It's really more of a cleanup legislation that will help the Board of Elections when they're trying to read these petitions and approve the actual petition. So we're looking at that for maybe June or July.
Okay. Another kind of contentious issue in the county lately is the Healthy Howard program. It's been the subject of some hearings lately as Peter Berlison has gone back to the county for more money.
Yes.
Can you give your thoughts on Healthy Howard and what you've observed in the years that it's been?
I think it's an innovative program that was begun as a pilot and really still is a pilot program. I was, and still am, pretty leery about funding it in terms of the long term. And I will have to make a decision this budget year whether I will support it this year. I agreed to support the pilot program, which took place over the last 2 years. I don't know where I'm going to end up this year, but we have to go through some work sessions on it to learn more about it. I don't think it's
they've really never met their benchmark for enrollees, have they?
They didn't meet their original estimate, but they have accomplished quite a lot through Healthy Howard. I think if we can learn from what they have accomplished and take it forward in a different direction, whether that means we don't fund it, whether that means we just use our resources to enroll people in existing programs. I think there's a lot of questions that need to be answered. I have not made up my mind on Healthy Howard, but I think there are legitimate questions about it.
It seems to me that this has become a political football between County Executive Ken Ullman and County Councilman Greg Fox. And it seems that they've each dug in their heels, and at all costs, they want to win, and they want to make sure that their position is the prevailing position. In looking at the county executive's operating budget that was unveiled, I think, earlier this week, the Baltimore Sun, to their credit, picked up on the unveiling of the budget. But half the article is about Healthy Howard. And it just seems to me that it's getting way more attention than it should. And I'm just curious on your perspective whether this has become more of a political issue than a real issue. Because I think you're absolutely right. Why not invest those dollars into identifying existing programs that Howard County residents could take advantage of?
It's an issue, really, because the newspaper has made it an issue. I mean, it's only $500,000 out of the entire budget. There are other more important issues that don't get the same kind of attention. So it is something that Mr. Fox feels strongly against. And the newspapers are looking for stories, and I think that's one of the reasons why you see so much of it in the newspaper. But we don't get a lot of email from people on Healthy Howard.
That's actually a good. I'm going to jump ahead because you've been out knocking on doors.
Yes.
And in neighborhoods around your district, because last week you announced your intention to run mm-hmm. for re-election. First of all, what are you hearing?
What am I hearing?
What do people say?
First, let me just say this, that the county council job is what we call 20-20-60, 20% legislation, 20% zoning, and 60% constituent service. And that's solving the problems of the people in the houses where we knock on the
doors.
My
street lamp is out.
Exactly. And this week, for example, we had three very tenacious neighborhood speeding problems in different areas of District 1 that we deal with on a regular basis on trying to help people solve their problems. So when I go door to door, we learn a lot about what people are upset about. In general, people are pretty happy with the local quality of life in Howard County.
Yeah.
They don't have a lot of complaints. The schools come up a lot. They're happy with the schools. When people are unhappy, it's often about traffic or speeding or potentially a zoning violation. Like, for example, you move into a nice house and a landscape contractor decides to operate out of their house next to you.
Right.
And all of a sudden you have dump trucks and employees coming and going.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They don't want to report that. Because they don't want their name in the public record, so they call our office and we report it for them anonymously. Those are the kind of problems people get upset about. The problems that affect their daily quality of life in the neighborhoods. And that's more what I hear about than Healthy Howard. I mean, I don't think...
Or town center or referendums.
Center, DeRagon.
Do you hear that at all? DeRagon, we hear a little bit more about DeRagon because that affects some of the residents in District 1 immediately. But the things you guys are talking about are really inside baseball. In terms of when you're out. In fact, I would invite you both to come with me tomorrow to door knock. We're going to be door knocking in Ellicott City to see what we hear on a day-to-day basis.
Well, you know, what percentage, and I'd love to have my daughter with me tomorrow, so I can't.
But she can come.
I would love to do that one time. What percentage of people you knock on the door have no idea who you are?
That's kind of hard to judge. It depends on the neighborhood, but maybe 50%.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's pretty high. Yeah, people aren't always in tune with who their elected representative is on a local level.
Yeah.
So we try to change that by knocking on doors.
Well, that's what this is about.
So looking at this 20-20-60 breakdown, what are the election issues? If it's really not some of these inside...
What are the issues? It's, I think, first and foremost, education. People move here because of the public school system. Even if they don't have children in schools, they want to keep those property values high. So I think it's number one, education. Number two, growth. Reasonable, sensible policies on growth. And number three is taxes. They want to make sure that we're not increasing taxes. Not too many people really come in and say, I want you to lower my taxes. What they say is, just don't increase my taxes. We like the quality of life, and that's why I moved here. So those are the three big issues. And the fourth one that's cropped up a lot this year is the economy and jobs. We hear that a lot. In fact, we have a job swap that we sort of do on the council level in my district office, which is people write to us if they don't have a job or they're looking for a job. And we keep a list, and then we ask businesses to email us when they have job opening, and we share that information back and forth.
Really? Interesting. I lost my train of thought there for a minute.
Does that happen more and more these days?
Yeah, and then there's that. When you're out there marching around to these homes, are you keeping a record, tally of each?
Yes. I can tell you from the last election, the percentage of people that had education as their number one issue, taxes.
What about turnover? I mean, people moving in and out of neighborhoods.
What about it?
I mean, do you see that, you know, you 4 years ago you did this, and now you come back to you're finding there's a lot of disconnect? Are we still a transient county like we once were?
There is some turnover, but I don't think it's a huge amount.
Okay.
No.
Okay. Probably not as much in your district, I would imagine.
Right.
So following up on election issues, you obviously got a opponent this year.
Yes.
Bob.
Well, we hear that rumor.
Yeah, he hasn't really announced yet, I don't think.
It is a rumor.
And then there's that.
Anyway, so Bob Flanagan supposedly will be running against you. He's a former Secretary of Transportation for the state of Maryland. We had Dennis Schrader on early on in the life of this podcast, and I got some flack for it, but I refer to Dennis and Bob as has-beens. They're sort of, they've been there, they've done that, they went on to the state level. Dennis, to his credit, did very well, got a Bush appointment, was number, I don't know, 3-4 guy at FEMA, and now they come back to Howard County. Mm-hmm. What do you make of I guess specifically Bob Flanagan's return to local politics?
I don't really know. I don't know him that well. And since I've been involved in the last, I guess it's been 15 years since I started as a local activist working on school issues and then the school board and then the county council, I haven't really seen him involved on local issues. I know he has a lot of experience on the state level. So it is a little bit puzzling. I'm not sure whether he knows what he's getting into, actually, with the 20-20-60 that we talk about.
Right.
That's 60% of the job, which is not glamorous, and you're on the phone with people, you're trying to solve problems. Snowstorm is a good example.
I bet, yes.
24/7, helping people getting their streets cleared. I love that. That's what I do. That's what I live for, is to help people in the neighborhood with their local problems.
And kudos to you and several other county council people during the snowstorms and the blizzards. Just tremendous communication.
Yeah, I think that, you know, considering that it was a storm of the century, that the county actually did a pretty good job.
Right.
And speaking of the county doing a pretty good job, I know you read, I did a blog post yesterday.
Can I just stop you for one second
before you change
the subject? All right, before you go there. So one more thing on Bob.
Oh, I'm sorry. We're not done with Bob.
I got one more Bob question.
What about Bob?
So there's some new development that's going to be taking place on Route 1. I understand Bob has come out pretty vocally and I think actually testified before the county council. On concerns about traffic issues.
He did not testify in front of the county council. He asked a question of a witness in a zoning case.
Okay.
That may be what you're referring to.
Okay, I apologize.
He hasn't actually stated what his position is on that case. And since it is a zoning case, I can't really talk about the details of it until it's over.
That's because the council sits a zoning board.
Exactly. Right. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. We'll have you back for that one.
Now can I talk?
Now you can talk.
Actually, it kind of zoning is a good thing to talk about. I mean, I wrote a blog post yesterday. I called it 40 Freaking West.
And yes, I read that.
Yes, and I see that you responded.
By the way, the word freaking in my home, that's...
We don't use freaking.
That's one of the F words.
But we can use it on the podcast.
Like you can.
Okay. Is that okay with our producer? But and let me tell you where that came from. My daughter's orthodontist is on Route 40. Okay. And it's a continuing source of frustration to try to get from one side of Route 40 to the other.
Sure.
It just has never been a good connection
there.
And, of course, when I came home, came back, I'm like, why has 40 West always been like that? And I recall, and Paul and I were talking about this, of course, because of my gray, my white hair, you can tell I've been around for a while. When the Rouse Company had the exhibit slideshow in the old exhibit center, they used to say, you know, Columbia will add order to bad suburban sprawl, and they had a picture of 40 West with the Miracle Mile developments and as an example of bad planning.
Mm-hmm.
2004, the county had a Blue Ribbon Task Force. All the usual suspects got together and produced this wonderful document that you can get on the county website. And here we are 6 years later.
Mm-hmm.
But there is something happening. So
there is.
I'm setting you
and
up.
And I was so surprised you weren't aware of it.
I was not, but I am now.
we put together a committee to actually advise consultants on developing the design manual for Route 40. And that design manual is now a committee to work with. All right, let me explain this.
There's a task force involved, too.
Yeah, task force committee, same thing. Residents, business owners along Route 40, and residents in the area, worked with consultants to Department of Planning and Zoning to develop a design manual to guide the development and redevelopment of Route 40 in a 7-mile stretch between the river and essentially Turf Valley.
Okay.
And there are three commercial areas designated in that manual, Chatham, Normandy, and Chatham Forest. And the idea and the goal is to provide regulations, in some cases that are mandatory and in some cases that are advisory, to help shape the redevelopment Route 40, increase pedestrian connectivity, make the place look nicer, landscaping, setbacks.
But it's difficult. These are private properties.
It is difficult, and that's a challenge.
So what kind of carrots and sticks can the county offer to improve the situation?
Well, for example, if you want to use TNC zoning, you have to meet these standards.
TNC zoning, for those of us who...
Traditional neighborhood concept, which would allow redevelopment of shopping centers with apartments above stores.
Right.
So if you want to be able to use that kind of zoning...
Like Normandy's proposal.
Yes.
Like, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, actually, I'm not sure what Normandy's proposal is. I'm not sure if it's TNC, and it's not a zoning case that I can talk about since it's...
With zoning board, we'll be back to that again.
Okay. But if they were to come in with TNC, then they would have to meet these guidelines.
I see.
So there is a carrot and a stick there. So what we're doing right now is we're going to have a public hearing. It's going to be introduced before the county council for adoption in June, and we'll have a public hearing to have feedback on that design manual. And we should be able to get that up and running by July or August. In addition to that, there's a streetscape plan and implementation that will occur between July of this year and spring of next year. That'll be a lot of... essentially landscaping along Route 40 to make it look nicer.
Will there make any kind of pedestrian connections easier from one side to the other? I mean, that's...
Well, we're trying. For example, one of the things we're funding this year is a sidewalk all the way up St. John's Lane from Route 40 to Route 99.
Hmm.
And we're looking at the pedestrian access from 40 to that area, for example. So wherever we can, we are looking at trying to improve that. But as you said, it's all private property, and there's only so much we can do to a commercial strip that's already developed. That's
right.
Really the challenge.
Right, and funding.
Right, right. But we are providing funding in the budget for a lot of this now.
Okay, good.
So we are moving forward on Route 40.
All right, well, you know what?
What you have to remember is there's a lot fewer newspapers today than there was 4 years ago.
Absolutely.
And you cannot get everything covered. And even you make an effort to make sure people know about things. But, you know, downtown Columbia took a long time in terms of resources, county resources, in terms of the newspaper resources. So we didn't hear too much about, for example, the redevelopment of Route 40, but we have been working on it.
And kudos to you. You did send me an email last night. I will write a follow-up post.
A correction,
for that.
I hope.
Yeah, well, a correction, follow-up post.
There are no corrections in blogs.
Yeah, there are no corrections.
He doesn't allow corrections.
I don't allow corrections. My commenters usually take care of that.
Right.
But it's important because I think people don't know. You're right. There is... and that's got a lot about what Hoka Mojo is about, and what right. we're trying to do here is do it to heighten awareness, because that information doesn't get out.
Right.
And all people say is, wasn't there a study done 6 years ago? What the heck's going on?
Yeah. Well, most things take 6 years to come to fruition in this county. So. What about Route 1?
Route 1, we just keep, as properties come in and ask for redevelopment, they're subjected to the Route 1 manual, and we're trying to make progress as things are redeveloped. We're slowed down because the economy has slowed down new development. Sure. So we keep working every time we have an opportunity down there to improve.
My partner and I built a beautiful building on Route 1, and it's sitting, and I'm going to put in my plug. It's waiting for a tenant or a buyer. So. On that note. Courtney, what's the future? You're obviously running for county council for your second term. What are the long-term plans?
Long-term plans. Well,
and I'm not talking about getting your kids off to college.
I was
and
just
going to
say, at 4:15, I have a baseball game.
And I think the listeners need to know. Courtney comes from a family that has a legacy in Howard County of leadership. I believe your father was the second county executive.
He was, yes.
Ed Cochran.
I believe that local government should have what I consider to be citizen legislators. I think it's important that we don't have a government made up of career politicians or full-time politicians. And so I've been happy to serve, want to serve my neighbors and community members in representing them in local government. As long as I feel like I can help, as long as I feel that people want me to serve, I'll continue to be involved. What form that takes next year or the year after that, I'm not so sure. But I do really strongly believe in average citizens being involved. And for example, I have a job in the private sector in business, and it's important to have small business represented on the county council.
I agree.
I'm the only one that has any experience with small business there now, and I think it's important to have that perspective. It's important to have the perspective of a parent with kids in the school system there. So I do not know where I will be in 4 years or 8 years, but I hope to always be involved.
And as a small business owner, I appreciate having that perspective on the county council. It's like you said on your website, you're an average citizen just like the rest of us.
That's right. So. I truly am, and nothing makes me happier than to solve the annoying problem in your neighborhood so that you can continue to have a great quality of life with you and your family.
Well, it's funny when you say that, because it is very true. There was an issue in our neighborhood in Ellicott City. I'm in your district.
Right.
When Ken was running and Chris Murden had your seat, there was a battle with Ellicott City Cable Company.
Right, I remember.
And Ken got all over that issue,
right.
And people didn't know whether he was a Democrat or Republican. All they know is he solved that
right.
problem, and
right.
I think he carried our neighborhood very well. So.
Absolutely, and on the local level, I think overheated partisan rhetoric has no business, And it's not about what party you are, it's about good local government.
Yep, good responsible government.
Courtney, that sounds like a good place to stop. We thank you for joining us
today.
You're welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Hopefully we can have you back again in the future and keep abreast on issues that are on your plate.
Great.
Yeah, thanks for coming by. Hi, what's your name?
Charles Grigsby.
Hi, Charles. Mother's Day is coming up.
Yes, sir.
Uh-huh. Have you thought about it?
Always do.
And have you gotten anything for Mother's Day yet?
Well, I'm thinking about flowers. That's about it.
Is that what you do every year?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Have you ever forgotten?
Of course.
What was that like?
I made up for it.
Great. Hi, what's your name?
My name is Carlos Godinez.
Hi, Carlos. You obviously know we're talking about Mother's Day. You got any plans?
Well, my mom is out of the country, so.
Will you call her?
Yes, I will, of course.
You do that every Mother's Day?
Yes, we do.
Okay.
Yes, I do.
Great. Thank you. Hi, your name?
Alana Bittner.
Hi, Alana. Of course, it's Alana Bittner. Mother's Day.
I love Mother's Day. It's my favorite holiday.
It is your favorite holiday.
Well, it's something.
So, do the kids get you something?
Typically, yes.
And how old are the kids?
11 and 3.
So you get the handmade cards?
Some handmade cards. The older Thing One, as we call him.
Thing One.
Has started actually purchasing some gifts from time to time.
And what kind of gifts do you expect from him?
Diamonds, sapphire,
I want his allowance.
Yeah, me too.
Has anybody ever forgotten Mother's Day?
Actually, my very first Mother's Day was forgotten.
Last time that happened. Hi, what's your name?
Savannah.
Do you know Mother's Day is coming up?
Yes.
Have you gotten your mother anything?
About to today, actually.
You're going to get something today. It's 2 weeks early.
Yeah, I know. Well, her birthday comes up a week before.
Oh, my God. You got Mother's Day and a birthday?
Yep.
So do you get them one gift or two?
Two.
That's like having your birthday right before Christmas. I always felt bad for those people. They always get the short end of the stick.
No, that's awful.
Will you go to lunch or anything with your mom on?
Yeah, I'm buying her lunch.
Cool.
As well.
Where? At Lakeside Cafe?
No.
Because you could probably get a discount here, right?
Not only when I'm working.
Have you ever forgotten Mother's Day?
No.
Good job.
Good. What's your name?
Jean.
Jean, Mother's Day is coming up. Are you aware of that?
Yes, I am.
And are you a mother?
Yes, I am.
And what do you hope to get for Mother's Day this year?
The Susan Boyle CD.
Okay.
Excellent.
Very nice. Very nice. Now, has anyone forgotten your Mother's Day before?
Oh, never. Never.
Is that
how many kids?
Two kids. Two boys. 11 and 8.
And they knew the wrath of mom if they forgot, right?
Not the wrath of mom, but they appreciate me so much that they remember.
That's wonderful.
You're a very lucky mother.
Yes.
Happy Mother's Day to
Happy
you.
Mother's
Thank
Day.
You.
And that about wraps up another episode of And Then There's That. On behalf of myself and Paul Scalney, we'd like to once again thank Michael and Min So for allowing us to commandeer this corner of their Lakeside Cafe in Columbia Town Center on yet another beautiful spring afternoon. We'll be back again on May 14th with special guest Gene Parker, the general manager of Merriweather Post Pavilion. We hope you'll join us.
Dennis, have a great afternoon.
You too, Paul.